Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 260. Thank you for tuning in. Can't remember if I said I'm moving guests around left, right and centre, but I wanted to move today's guest forward because it's a cracking episode and I kept thinking about it. So I'm joined today by the wonderful Jade Adams, great comedian, great human. We'd not met properly until I went and visited the home of her and her lovely man slash pudding, Rich. It was great to meet him briefly. I've heard him a lot on Hardcore Listing podcast, on Off the Beaten Track podcast and things like that. And I'd heard Jade on Off the Beaten Track as well and on Adam Buxton's podcast, all over the place. So yeah, it was great to get this going. Before we get into it, I've got some big news. We have a new podcast on the network. It launched yesterday. Dan Lesac has joined the network with his new podcast, Falling Forward. Go and download it now, please. I want it to jump up the iTunes charts, the Spotify charts, the whatever charts there are. Yeah, it's really exciting. Dan had been talking to me about doing a podcast for a while now, and as ever, I was encouraging of that idea. And obviously, as soon as it was a reality, I offered him a place on the Distraction Pieces network as a little platform. Of course I did. It's Dan Lesac, one of my favourite people and one of the biggest influences on my life in general. So yeah, go and listen to that. His guests, I'm recording this before the first one goes out, so I'm not sure if he's announcing his guests ahead of time, but his guests are fantastic and the conversations sound fascinating. So yeah, Falling Forward with Dan Lesac is available now on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, all those places. If you're about on Saturday and want to come hang out, it'd be lovely to see you. My club night is back at We Are Lizards at the book club, free before 9 p.m, a fiver afterwards, and then it climbs as the night goes on. I think, yeah, come down. It'd be good to see you all. I love that more and more podcast listeners come each time. It's lovely. The earlier you get there, the more time I'll have to have a chat with you and to have photos if you want photos, or sign stuff if you want stuff signed. The later the night goes on, A, the more drunk I'll be, and B, the busier it is, so it's harder to talk and engage, and the noisier it is. I'll be DJing about midnight normally, either 11, midnight, 1, I don't know, it varies. Oh, we're joined by Simone from Primal Scream, which is hugely exciting. So yeah, come on down. I'm not even going to plug speechofelementrecords.com, because you all know about that. I go on about it every episode. I'll mention the Patreon. It's still only a quid, and you get some bonus podcasts on there. You get Poem of the Month, so some free spoken word. It's all good fun, but that's just over at Patreon. I'm not going to hard sell to you guys, to you lovely lot. Jade's tour, she's doing previews of her new show, which we talk about in the show. I'll mention quickly where she's going. She's going to Durham, Bristol, Edinburgh, London, Lewis, Bristol again, the World's Comedy Festival, and MacFest. I realize now I've heard of MacFest. I didn't know it had a crazy name. I assume that's MacFest. Yeah, I'll give the exact details at the end because we talk about what the show is and what inspired the show. I think you're going to love this. Jade is certainly, I mean, a rising star that's already a hell of a star. So, yeah, exciting stuff. This is episode 260 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. Oh, I should mention now, if this is your first time tuning in, I always forget, but I like to try and give some other episodes that you might enjoy. So let's go with previous comedians. I've had Josie Long. I've had Sarah Pascoe on. I should add on, rather than claiming to have had all these wonderful people. Catherine Ryan, Ashlyn B, Stuart Lee, Robin Ince. Oh, the list is endless. Chris Ramsey. the list is endless, so I'll probably just leave it there. But loads of good comedians have been on. Russell Howard, Russell Kane, Russell Brand. That's a trifecta of the three funny Russells. Brett Goldstein, all sorts of people. I've had loads of great comedians on. So go and give them all a listen. Let's just get on with the podcast. This episode, I'm going to have a little chat at the end as well, because there's something that we talk about that after I left, I wasn't sure. I thought it was open to misinterpretation potentially. So we'll get into that. But for now, this is episode 260 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Miss Jade Adams. Thank you very much. Well, I've started a recording.
Oh, great.
It became a bit of a podcast cliche to just start recording halfway through the conversation. And now I feel it's become more of a cliche to reference that cliche. I think more people now go, oh, it's so podcast of us. So it's kind of started to eat itself in a way. But I'm here today with Jade Adams. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for coming over to my house.
It's beautiful here. We're looking out over Leon Sea, and it's lovely. I won't give you exact map locations, but
there's a train, as you can hear. I can see a boat and a little bit of water at the moment, which is nice. The water comes in twice a day.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And then the boat gets all excited when the water's in, and then when the water's out, the boat's really sad looking.
Yeah.
I've sat here quite a lot.
Because it is a mad run. Because as I said earlier, I went to school up this way, so we'd get the train in, and then we'd decide if we're actually going into school or not, or if we're bunking off and going, well, we're in Southend. Why wouldn't we just enjoy Southend? And it's the weirdest kind of seafront ever, because when the water's in, it's beautiful. And when the water's out, it kind of looks like a swamp.
It's
like
gross,
a scary,
horrible swamp.
Yes, yeah, sci-fi swamp. Okay. I'm just spinning the mic right now. Oh, yeah.
A Woman in Black was filmed on an island over there with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah,
so, you know, Disappearing Island?
Yes.
That's over there, apparently.
Oh, that's terrifying, isn't it?
So, yeah, it proper goes swampy over there. But we moved here because we wanted to afford the same rent together, and I wanted to have a second bedroom. And I also, London is just not fun anymore.
It's not.
It's not like it used to be. I can now pop in and I don't have to, you know, like the amount of violence that you hear about. And I may sound so old. The amount of violence that you hear, but it's really terrifying. Like up the road from where I used to live, there was an acid attack only 6 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And it meant that I just was like, let's just move somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's probably a little bit cowardly and it, but this place is so relaxed. I left my laptop in my porch.
Yeah.
By mistake.
Yeah.
With the door open for a whole weekend, and I came back and the laptop was still there.
Amazing.
It's mad.
I genuinely, about a month ago now, I popped to my local shop and I bumped into some people. I was down there for a while, and when I got home I realised I'd literally forgotten to close my front door, so it was literally all the way open.
Oh, was it?
And nothing had happened, but everyone assumed there was someone in there. But I completely agree. I do love London, but I think the only reason I love London is because I don't live in London. I've always lived in Essex, so I've always been near enough to go and enjoy the amazing parts of it, and the theatre and the food and the gigs and all of that is
arts.
It's amazing, yeah. But I love getting to leave. A friend of mine was saying recently that he feels the only reason I live in Essex is so I've got a good excuse to leave any event, so I can just go, I've got to get back, because I am kind of antisocial at times.
Exactly.
Again, it is true. It's like, it's perfect. I can at all points, at any time, because you can be, oh, it's a couple of hours. Even if it's early in the afternoon, you're like, I need to get back before, you know, evening stuff. So
that's why I'm here as well.
It's perfect.
It's the perfect
excuse. You've got a reason
to
leave.
And no one minds, and they don't call you boring, and they don't say, oh, you know, you've changed or stuff. I had someone the other day that I knew from school grab me. I don't know if this happens to you now that you're well known, but people that you used to know sort of being quite violent with you when they're praising you.
Yeah.
And I had that the other day, and they were like, oh, you know, why are you leaving now? And I was like, because I've got to get home. And then she grabbed me and she sort of strangled me and said, "No, don't get all celebrity on me." And I was like, "What are you on about?"
Yeah.
And it was the excuse of leaving that pub was, "I have to get home."
Yeah.
It was so great.
I have to get back to Essex. It's such a weird one as well, because it's a good point, because I was never, it's a weird jump. I was never one of the cool kids at school.
Me neither.
So then when you've got something that not makes you cool, but gives you a reason to have attention, because I said I went to school up the road from here, and we did a festival a while back and we headlined it, and it was, the reason we agreed to do it was literally, you could hear that park from my school. I used to mess about in that park on the way to school all the time. So it was exciting to go,
like, here's a homecoming.
Yeah. And at school, I said, I wasn't one of the popular kids. I didn't do particularly well. My English teacher warned one of my mates against hanging around with me. They told my mate that he could do better than hanging around with me and my mate Mark. So it was a big deal to go, here we are. Like, we've done all right.
With him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm friends with the one that I was paired in with as warned against.
Oh, okay. Were you? Oh, yeah.
And not particularly the one that was actually warned against us both. So yeah. Me and Mark are still buddies, but maybe Martin could have done better. but yeah, it was exactly that. It was weird to bump into a few people from school and have exactly that. Have that weird feeling of, right, you were always the dominant one. And you still are in many ways, because that's just how you are. That's how you grew up at school. That's kind of how it remains. I've not become some kind of, no, I'm an alpha male.
Yeah.
So it's that weird thing of, they're like, oh, it's great, you're doing good. But there still is that slight, I want to still tower over you slightly.
The difference I have is that I am a natural alpha female, but I beta female myself in order to make the alphas like me.
Right.
Because I'm very attracted to alpha females, because I kind of want to be them.
Yeah.
And then I sort of beta female for a little while. And then after a while, I get really fed up with being the fly eater.
Yeah.
And I also, I'm almost like, oh, fuck this shit. I'm going to have my time. And then I fall out right. with women because of it. Not all women.
Yeah.
But I will say that I've had a lot of run-ins with women, and it's normally to do with pretending to be something I'm not in order to make other people like me.
Yeah.
And I found that just being myself now, I mean, I'm not swamped with massive groups of female friends, but it does mean that I'm being a version of myself that I think is real, and not keeping myself awake at night replaying, replaying things where I sort of think about what I've said that day, or, like, you know, I don't know if you get like that, but like, oh, did I say, why did I say that? And because now I'm just being myself.
Yeah.
So it's different going back to school now, because I wasn't ever the most popular person at school. Secondary was fine. I sort of was on the peripheries of stuff. I found the music room and I sort of stayed there.
Yeah.
And then to find that through these basically two nerds. Fantastic. That I probably used to, I didn't pick on them, but the two rough girls that I used to hang out with before I hung out with them, they did.
Right.
And then I was sat on my own because I'd fallen out with my rough friends, and they said, do you want to come and join us in the music room? And it was that moment that changed my life. I wouldn't be sat on the sofa with you right now, or living in Lee, or knowing Rich, or having my career in anything, had that situation not have happened.
It's amazing to be able to pinpoint that kind of, this is the moment that I was allowed to almost relax and be myself, not have to worry about what the perception is of me. I can be in this little room and it's all okay.
It's always the loneliest times in my life that I've been able to be myself.
Yeah.
And even though I've been sad and I've fallen out with people and that always hurts, it's where I found myself, because the only option I've got is either being so sad that I want to do something stupid, or essentially being a phoenix rising from the ashes each time, even though, you know, that after the 15th time of falling out with someone in your life, you're sort of like, oh, I'm a phoenix again.
Yeah.
But those are the best times I've had. Loneliness has been my strength, I think. I don't know if you had this from not being very popular, but when I felt lonely, I feel like I've had a lot of strength. I look at popular people and I'm like, you have got a very busy life and have no time to yourself. And you've got a lot of people to buy presents for, a lot of people to stay in touch with, a lot of people you owe favours to and all of that sort of stuff. But I feel like if you're a bit of a lone wolf, you can kind of glide around.
completely.
A bit more carefree.
Do you appreciate and need your time to yourself and your own time?
I didn't think I did. And then I went away. So after my sister died,
yeah.
I went away for 5 months with a drag queen. No, it was 2 years after. So I had a boyfriend. He and I had a terrible time together. We shouldn't have ever been together. He suffers with manic depression, and I was grieving. So we were like a very cheery pair.
Yeah, it's a hell of a combination. They're going to feed each other a lot, aren't they, right? You're going to keep in a cycle there.
Well, I tried to pretend I wasn't sad in order to help him with his.
Yeah. And that can be helpful in those situations. Having, feeling a responsibility for someone else can make you be strong for yourself.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because often you will just go, well, I'm not worth being strong for, but I need to be strong for that person. That can genuinely be a positive in those
incredibly tough times. It's like that higher purpose. It's like that higher purpose stuff that they do in AA,
right.
Which is like having a God to, you know, when you go to, I've not been to AA, but I've got friends that have been. Yeah. And one of the things in AA is they give you God to think of outside of yourself. So
that's
like grief is one of the most self-absorbed things that can happen to you.
Yeah.
But if like I'd say, you know, thank you to him actually in a way for being a conduit of my grief, really.
Yeah.
For that time, because I don't know how I would have reacted had he not have been around. But then we split up, and I kicked his door in.
Why did you kick his door in?
I kicked his door in because he split up with me and then met another girl. Classic.
Yeah.
And they're still together, which is nice to know. It's been 5 years. I think that's
it's
really
kind of enjoyable. When that it's like, oh, it wasn't just a fling. He wasn't just bored of me.
Yeah.
It was, you know.
We broke up, but you're still with. We broke up for this, but you're still together. So it's sort of not. And also, like, we shouldn't have been together at all.
Yeah.
And then I know that I'm probably not his favourite person in the world, but that's, you know, it's just, you know, oh well.
Yeah.
Don't really mind.
Get over your door, mate.
Yeah,
grow
mate.
Up.
I didn't put a hole in it, I don't think, but he did put a hole in his own door.
Right.
That was another story. It was a really messy relationship. But then after that, I went to Edinburgh Fringe, did a little show. And then when I got back, I sort of got asked by this drag queen if I wanted to come to Europe or Spain and do drag Shakespeare to teenagers.
That's amazing, because that's the kind of experience that you jump on if you're single, but don't necessarily if you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
So kind of one door closes, you kick it in. Then another door opens and you go through that door. So, yeah.
That's a perfect analogy of my life. Yeah. One door closes, kick it in, turn the fuck off and then go to the next door.
Exactly. I love it.
So then I went on this 5 month thing with this guy and this girl, and it was just three of us. I mean, you literally couldn't have put three people with the least amount in common.
Amazing.
Together for 5 months. And I wrote, like, I did a morning pages when I was there. I've got a book full of all the morning pages for 5 months. I haven't read it yet. It's been 5 years or since 2013. I don't know how long ago that was. And then when I got, I can't remember why I was telling you this. There was a reason why I was telling you this.
I can't think.
We were talking about alone time.
Yes.
So it was on that trip, because I didn't get on very well with Ted or Neus, who was driving us, I was sort of forced, and I couldn't get on the internet because there was no Wi-Fi, my phone was a British phone.
Yeah.
I was forced into solace.
Yeah.
And into spending time on my own. And it was there, and via the medium of Facebook Messenger and some lovely people that spoke to me every day, I grieved, and it was in Spain that I barely saw Spain. Like, I travelled literally from the top of Spain to the bottom of Spain in a car, saw none of it, because I spent the entire time just listening to music and thinking.
I love it.
And it was the alone time. And then when I got back, there was a competition that they'd asked me to do it loads. This competition, and I'd always said no. And then one day I got an email. It said, "Oh, do you want to enter this competition? It's a women's comedy competition." And I went, "Ah, fuck it." And I signed up the form, and just before I pressed enter, I said to myself, "I'm going to win this." Pressed it, and then lo and behold, 5 months later I win it. And it was in 2014, Funny Women I won.
Yeah.
And that was basically the catalyst for everything that's happened since.
That's amazing.
And it's all because of loneliness. It's all because of being on my own. I think everyone is so scared of their own thoughts because they think they really mean something, but they don't. And I know this because I've smoked weed.
Yeah.
And I know that skunks specifically, weed's different, but I've smoked a lot of hydroponic, scary schizo crack stuff in my time. And I know that this stuff, like this type of skunk, it can make you really paranoid.
Yeah.
And you get bullied by your own thoughts. And that's how I know that when I have moments like that, because I don't smoke weed anymore now. I'm way too busy for that shit.
Yeah.
But when I was younger,
same.
Me and Ollie, who I was with, we smoked it. That's all we did in our relationship. Yeah. All I remember is rolling joints for him. I'm really good at rolling joints.
I genuinely think that. Stuff like that is, if you're the right person in the right mindset, it's beneficial and life-changing. I did a lot of acid as a kid.
I've never done it.
It really, I don't do any drugs now. I say I did a lot. It was my favourite drug of all the drugs. And I haven't done any drugs at all.
What did you like about it? Because I've never done it.
It was exactly that. It was the stuff it made me realise, because I had to battle with my own mind. It's fascinating, because the first time you do acid with mates, you're trying to freak out your mates. You're trying to make them go weird. I remember my mate Chris, who does hardcore listening with Stu. He was sat kind of so slightly to my right, and we're all kind of in a circle. And I was a little bit above because I was on the sofa, and I'd just go, "You all right, mate?" And then when he looked round, I'd be looking in the direction, listening to people, and I'd just look in the other direction and clock. When he was looking away, then go, "It's all a bit weird, isn't it?" And he'd look round again, and it'd look as if I'm just engaging in a conversation elsewhere. And I had fun with that, but what was the breakthrough for me and hallucinogenics was when you realise it's far more fun to mess with yourself.
Yeah.
To go into your own mind, to push your boundaries. It can get scary at times and uncomfortable, and I'm not recommending it to anyone. I think drugs in general, we have a bad perception of them. I think it'd be better if things like acid, for example, I want all of them legal, but maybe for acid, it's like a car.
Yeah.
That you have to
get a license
test.
For.
Do a theory test, pass a license, you're okay for it.
I don't think I'm the right mind for acid, which is why I've never done it. I've been offered it loads.
Yeah.
I did festivals for many years.
Yeah.
But I was offered acid, and someone once put a load of mushrooms in my mouth, and I spat them out again. Yeah. Just because I feel like, number one, you have to be in the right company, which is what everyone always says. And number two, I used to have, when I was a kid, I used to have things like terror nightmares. I don't know if you've, have you got kids?
No.
No. Kids have nightmares, but then kids can have something called terror nightmares, which is where they almost have a fit when they wake up and you can't wake them up.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with, I've known people who've had them really bad, and it's just, it's
I had them until quite, I had them until quite a late stage of my life. I was probably, the last time I had one was like 16 years old, and I used to have something where, I don't know if anyone else gets this, and if anyone else gets this, please tell me, because it would be, I know this exists because I wrote it down on Google, and other people on forums had said they had it. But basically it's a thing where you're totally awake, and I've been told it's a panic attack, but I don't admit that I have panic attacks because I'm like tough and stuff. But it's this thing, so you basically, you're awake, and then everything starts feeling big. So like things are like the perception of, it's probably what acid's like.
Yeah.
The perception of things that you touch and you can see are big, and you start like hearing loads of noise in your head that's like voices, but you can't understand exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And the only way I can get rid of this, and it makes me really anxious, and the only way I can get rid of it is if I look in a mirror.
Right.
And
and
so based on all of this, this is why I've not done acid.
Yeah. No. And again, I completely agree. I've considered it recently and been offered it recently and decided not, because I feel my teenage mind, who did acid, genuinely believed everything that you need to believe to stop yourself from having a trip. So just to be really brief on it, that there's nothing to say that the reality we see on acid is any more or less real than the reality we see now, right? Because it's all the way our brain is interpreting light reflecting off stuff.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is changing how that's interpreted. That doesn't mean it's more or less real. What you may see may be completely different to what I see, like right now.
Yeah.
Your red may not be my red. There's no way of knowing these things. So
I think that when I eat chicken.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I bet this tastes different to other people.
Yeah, again, there's tons of that we can never know.
Yeah.
And I truly 100% believe that. And I feel from what I'd read and the study, again, I'm a nerd for this. I didn't just take acid like, let's try acid. I did tons of research. I was like, yes, it's right for me. I found my drug. But
people don't understand this about drugs. I have this argument with my mother. Argument with my mother and stuff about... I've had this argument with my mother about weed, and because I've been very around drugs,
yeah.
Not in a way that where I've been doing them. I've dabbled in various things, but yep. I've been around drugs a lot.
Yeah.
I've seen the effects of certain drugs, and I know that there are different. You cannot group all drugs into one conversation because each different. Like I watch people who smoke weed who have manic depression or probably bipolar disorder. I know someone who microdoses by smoking little bits of weed all day long, not enough to get stoned, but enough to keep his brain from frying. And he can go without it, but also if he is feeling anxious, that's how he stops it.
Yeah.
And he's still busy and he does stuff and he's still successful and all of this. And I feel like sometimes, especially the government and the television and all that, they paint a picture of drugs that's really false. And I think that it's that lack of information which means people overdose.
Yeah.
It's going to be there whether you say you deny it or not. But like if you don't tell people how to take drugs properly, they're one day just going to take it all in the wrong way and end up like Leah Betts in the 90s,
yeah.
Which it was the story.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. It was around here. It was Leah. It was Essex.
Essex?
Yeah,
wow.
It was a local thing.
I remember that came to our school.
Yeah. It's mad. But it feels like I'm getting a plug in here, but there's another podcast I'm more a guest on, but it's called Say Why to Drugs, and it's a woman called Dr. Susie Gage, and she picks a drug each episode, and we give she gives a scientific breakdown of why it appeals, of what's good about it, of what's dangerous about it, why it's dangerous. And it's no kind of, as she dispels all the myths. The main reason I'm there is because in my youth, I've taken most of them.
Yeah.
And I don't now. So I've not got a horse in the race. I can say, here's what it did. Here's what I enjoyed about it.
Yeah.
Here's what I didn't like about it. I can be honest and not be, I'm a stoner, therefore weed's the best in the world. So
it really helped me grieving. People yeah. say, oh, what are your tips to grieving? And I'm like, just lock yourself away for 2 years until everyone stops giving you that stupid face they do in the first initial stages of it, which is the face that no one can help doing. And I've probably done it to people that have lost people, but like the sympathetic face that it's almost not for you. It's for them to feel like they've done something useful. Yeah,
completely,
and
completely.
I had to like shut myself off from all of that stuff and it was, I just did it with weed. I just smoked from 2011 to 2013. I was mostly stoned.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I will advocate the use of marijuana in that way. I mean, if you're not getting anything done and you're being a lazy shitbag, stop smoking weed.
Completely.
Like, it's not for you.
And again, as you said, that's the key bit for you. Like, I stopped smoking weed because I wasn't productive on it. I had a business partner at the time who was only productive if he was stoned. If he smoked for an evening, he'd get half the month's worth of work done and just get it all done, all design stuff and all stuff like that. If I smoked, I wouldn't get anything done. So it wasn't for me. And again, you're completely right. We do, or the government, and weirdly, it genuinely always feels like everyone's parents all just bracket under one thing. It's drugs. And He's a druggie. I've heard that a few times. Like off my dad, who's a really liberal guy, but every time I hear that, oh, he's a bit of a druggie, I think, well, what does that mean? Because I was a bit of a druggie. I mean, again, it sounds so obvious to say alcohol is a drug, but it is.
It is.
My dad drinks alcohol, so my dad's a bit of a druggie. And it's
alcohol's
like,
literally,
such a vague and broad thing.
Alcohol is literally worse than smoking weed.
Yeah, yeah.
I've drank both, and I can tell you which one of those two that I've done stupid things on.
Yeah, completely.
And it's always alcohol.
Of course.
You hear all these stories about men being bad and men doing this and upset. Like, all the stories I hear about men fucking up in terms of the Me Too stuff that came out, all of these men that I've heard stories of have been either on drugs or drunk.
Yeah.
And it's that this is a conversation. It's not.
I mean, let's go even more specific. It's coke or booze.
Coke or booze.
They're the two that are the worst. And again, I also want to be clear that a lot of these guys don't need any help. to be pieces of shit. Do you know what I mean? They can do it sober as well.
It's now,
but it's Coke and booze are the two. I don't want that to sound as if we're giving an excuse.
No, not at all.
They were on
the Coke and booze enable them to rid themselves of the insecurities they have to not act like a prick.
Yeah.
That's what that does.
I've always felt that we don't highlight enough how much they are just crutches and enabling. I've had mates who've cheated on their partner, for example, and be like, I was so drunk. It's like, but you went out and got drunk to cheat on your partner. You went out and got drunk so you could have an excuse to act like that. You know, it's such an easy thing to go, I was drunk, I didn't know what I was doing. It's like, you did before you drank, though. Before you had that first drink, you went out thinking, I want a free pass. So let's
drink
or take drugs or whatever. And it gives me my excuse because I wasn't in control. So, yeah, but you put yourself in that situation still.
Yeah, there's no excuse for being drunk or anything. Yeah. You did it because you did it.
Yeah, completely.
All the stuff I've ever done that's stupid when I've been drunk is stuff that I've wanted to do.
Yeah, completely. All the stupid stuff I've ever done in my life is when I'm really tired.
Yeah.
Which is really odd. But every time I've had things where I've acted inappropriate, or I've been on tour and I've flirted on DMs or something like that, it's been really late at night and it feels a bit like a dream. But again, it's an excuse. It's going, oh, I'm not all there. I'm a bit spaced out. It's like, no, it's still, it doesn't excuse anything.
No, tiredness breeds also like insecurity and makes you feel shit. And then what happens when you feel shit is you want to replace that shit feeling with like something that makes you feel better.
Yeah.
So like for me, food can do that. Well, it clearly has done that with me. Like if I feel shit, if I eat something that I really love, I will feel happy again.
Yeah.
I've never had a drug dependency, really. Like, you can't really call my 2 years on smoking weed a drug dependency because I just came off of it. Came off of it, but I just stopped smoking weed when I went on tour.
There's no
hang-up from that at all.
Yeah.
But, like, I've never had that sort of, like, cocaine need, or I know people that just can't go out without getting on it. And I just like, I mean, I hate cocaine so much. I hate it.
It's the one drug I struggled with on the episode of Say Why to Drugs. And I said to Susie beforehand, you might want to get someone else because it's the one drug I'm so biased against. I think it's the one I've never done, but it's because all the other drugs I'd watch people on and thought, that looks good. And cocaine I'd watch people on and thought,
you're an arsehole.
Wow, I thought he was a nice person.
Turns out
he's a prick. But it's like, I don't want to. There's no appeal to that.
No.
Cocaine and cigarettes are the two that I didn't see the appeal of. I'm a slave to logic. All the other drugs, I was like, I see the risk. I see the appeal. I see the reward. Whereas those two, I was like, I don't get it.
Rich Wilson and you would, my boyfriend, would get on really well with the smoking chat. I smoke sparingly. I do. And
but I understand it is if the first time you do it,
I was 13.
It's to try and be cool or to fit in or whatever else. Because other than that, there isn't a logical reason to do
why
it for
you'd
the first
start.
Time. Because weed, you smoke it because it has a physical effect that's positive. Cigarettes only give you addiction.
And cancer.
And cancer. Yeah, the two. Addiction, cancer.
I would love to. I never quit or do. And I'm myself, so I'm not going to quit nothing. But that smoking would be the one that I quit. I've just ordered a really wicked vape.
Yeah.
With like some vanilla stuff to. I think vape smoking looks cool.
I like it because, again, I'm similar. On my one area of addiction is food and specifically ice cream. It's like I will just. I really enjoy healthiness, but when I fall off, I choose to fall off. It's never a guilt thing, but I go hard. And literally, my girlfriend was over a few weeks back, and the day before she went, we bought a two tubs of ice cream. And the day after she went, or the day after that, so it was within 48 hours, I was like, oh, I'm just going to buy some more ice cream. She's like, have you eaten them two tubs? I was like, not only have I eaten them two tubs, I bought two more tubs. I'm going to get a fifth tub. And it's been 48 hours. It's like, that's what's going on there. So, yeah, that
wow, you addiction. Really love ice cream, don't you?
Yeah, I text a James Acaster the other day just to say, I think I can eat more ice cream than him. Because he keeps talking about it on his off-menu podcast about how much he loves ice cream. And everyone's always shocked that they're like, you ate a tub of ice cream after the pub. What's wrong with you? That's crazy. And I'm sitting there thinking, I've had two tubs for breakfast before. Genuinely, I've had two tubs before lunchtime. And So me and James were arranging, where me, Stu and Chris often do our drunk casts, me and James were arranging a Ben and Jerry's cast where we're just going to see how much we can eat and how much it makes us go completely insane.
Here's my thought about addictions to food.
Yes.
And things like ice cream.
Yeah.
You get immense amount of joy out of eating ice cream. And in the process of you eating that ice cream, it doesn't hurt anyone. Maybe a cow somewhere has got some nipple thrush.
Yeah.
But you don't hurt anyone. You buy it. You don't steal it or anything like that. And you eat it. The only negative implication about eating lots of ice cream is that you put on weight.
Yeah.
But imagine there was no feeling about putting on weight being an issue. I was chatting to someone about this the other day. Recently, because of where my career is going, there's not a day that goes by that someone doesn't remind me I'm a fat... Can I swear?
Yes.
There's not a day that goes by that people remind me that I'm a fat cunt. It's been every day for a long time. And I've realised it's because... From a very young age, people really are told by their parents and elders, and there's always a little comment here or a little comment there. Don't put weight on. Oh, this person's tubby, that person's fat. It's been from like a young age. Imagine that from a young age, being fat wasn't an issue. Because I made a joke about this in my last show, but people's problems always with putting weight on are to do with, they always say, oh, it's a strain on the NHS and stuff. I'm not a strain on the, I'm an overweight woman, but I'm not a strain on the NHS at all. And they say, you know, that there's lots of health implications. And again, I don't know why people are worried so much about my health and or other people's health. I really think that there is an epidemic of every single person that I know has a negative thought in their head. Like Rich and I talk about it all the time. Like he'll be like, oh, I've put weight on. I'm like, so what? You're happy. You're in a relationship. We eat a lot. We like lobster.
And that's the key bit there is you said you're happy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that people...
When you eat your ice cream, you're happy, aren't you?
I'm delighted. I fucking love it. But I completely agree. And the key there is there'll be some people listening now, because there is this new boom of fitness and healthiness and all this kind of
thing. That shit.
I mean, I'm into it as well. I like exercise and I like eating healthy when I choose to. But the biggest thing for me was removing the guilt of when I don't eat healthy. Not beating myself up over it. But the thing that people can't get their head round is that it's exactly that. It's individual choice. And I understand people say, oh, but it's really bad for you, that being unhealthy is bad for you. It's like...
Why is it?
It might make your life shorter. Okay. I, for one, I've no desire to live for ages.
There's 8 billion people on this planet.
The thought of being 60 makes me uncomfortable, let alone 70 or 80 or anything else. But the strain on the NHS, again, we can go back to alcohol.
We die young.
A far bigger strain on the NHS and on your health and on everything else. It's that, I'm completely for people if being overweight is making them unhappy or uncomfortable. Because that's, again, that is a thing as well. I think it's easy to just go, oh, it's all fine. Some people, it will be making them uncomfortable in their life.
And they'll be ill and all of that.
And stuff like that.
That's a specific thing that a person who has that... This is the thing, is everyone seems to think that fat issues are their issues.
Yeah.
So someone else is fat. Like when I'm on a train and my arm is touching a person next to me, I've had people genuinely huff and move away from me because I'm sat next to them taking up space. If someone has made themselves obese and made themselves sick, it's still none of our fucking business.
It's still
their business. It doesn't become our business when someone gets cancer of the bollocks and we're not like, you've got cancer of the bollocks, so we need to discuss your balls all the time and what have you done to make that? You don't do that, but like apparently whenever you get fat and you put weight on, it becomes everyone else's fucking issue.
It's a bizarre one, isn't it?
And it's mad. And I haven't spoken loads about this, but my new show that I'm doing this year, clang, is I'm going to be talking a lot about body positivity.
Yeah.
Just because I never thought it was my conversation to have before. I'm what you would refer to as body positive, but I think that word's sort of been almost taken away by Instagram and big people on it, because there's a lot of like naked people in their pants online to sort of try and level up the playing field of like fat people on stuff. And so it'd be nice when I was a young girl to see myself on stuff like Tess Halliday was on the front cover of Cosmopolitan in a swimming costume, which I didn't think was necessary.
Right.
Like we are beautiful women, but she got weird knees. No one needs to see that. It fetishized it. Like I've got weird knees as well. One of my knees looks like Haley Joel Osment.
Right.
like I fetishize it.
I mean, that seems worthy of a magazine cover, like specifically.
Cosmos, well up for it. But Piers Morgan, it means that knobheads like Piers Morgan can then say stuff because they've fetishized something rather than make her look beautiful in a great bit of couture.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to be on the front cover of Cosmopolitan in a swimming costume. We just need to be on the front cover of Cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
You can't get fashion for being big either. Like, I can't dress myself if I want to. I have to get clothes made.
That's
like,
crazy,
my
isn't
couture.
It?
And all my suits and my dresses and a lot of the stuff I wear on stage, I have to get made because they just there's nowhere I can buy it. They seem to think that if you don't make fashion for fat people, they'll stop eating. But what's happened is people are just taking their clothes off.
Yeah.
But it's just and it's everywhere all the time. There's constant reminders all the time, and for me that's what body positivity is.
Yeah.
Is the fact that I, even though everyone's told me I look wrong and I am wrong and they've done that forever. And the first time I had sex, the guy denied it and didn't tell anyone at school and then ruined my sex life for like ever.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it wasn't until I met Rich that I met a guy who's like, oh, he's into big girls. That's wicked. I don't have to like worry or, you know, anything that. I'm finally with someone who actually his preference of woman is a big woman.
Yeah.
If any big women out there are looking at my boyfriend and you think you're going to come and get him,
stay away.
I've got him down lock and key, mate. You find your own. he's a free man. He can do what he likes, but don't.
I mean, the biggest threat really is my boyfriend, Stuart Whiffin.
So yeah, I know.
Their relationship has been the biggest
disgusting
issue, really. But
the two of them, I mean, it's an abomination, isn't it? Their friendship is gross. No, I love it. But this body positive conversation is sometimes, I feel like at the moment, there's a few people that are sort of attaching themselves to it. And I don't normally get apathy about stuff like this, mm-hmm. but I sometimes feel like there are women who are sort of jumping on a bit of a bandwagon that might not be their bandwagon.
Sure.
And because body positivity, even though I've been told by everyone I'm wrong, I still manage to have confidence in myself.
Yeah.
And that for me is what body positivity is. And I may be wrong and people might say this is incorrect. But I think that if you are really good looking and slim and a model and an actress in LA and in a role in something that you could only get if you were thin, I feel like it's not maybe your fight.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's a little bit like, everyone's just trying to pay their rent. I get it. But like, pay it with something that is yours.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah. I don't need no more skinny bitches. I don't need any more skinny bitches winning my fights for me.
Yeah.
I can do it myself.
Yeah.
And I feel like the world at the moment is really hard to keep things real.
Yeah.
Keeping it real is really hard at the moment because everyone's getting attention for like, you know, like, oh, I'm feeling shit today. What am I going to do? I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take my clothes off and then I'll get a black marker and I'll write brave on my body and then take a picture of that. Do you know, if I did that, it would go viral. And I know it would. If I took my clothes off, showed my gunt on Instagram and drew on black marker on my body, like brave and like things like that, it would go crazy on Instagram. Yeah. Isn't that mad that I know how to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's mad that there's these, that there are them simple rules or keys. And it's a tough one because I do think as well, I think it's a positive thing that we're moving more and more away from the taboo of nudity, of women and men being comfortable being sexual. I think all of that is a positive thing. But yeah, it is, where does the line come where it's just becoming another tool rather than being this great empowering thing for everyone?
It's like, you know, white people. I typed in the apartheid explained into. I do a joke about this, which you'd have to come and see the show for.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you it now, but I do a joke that involves the word apartheid explained, and I went onto YouTube and I typed apartheid explained, and a woman came up who didn't have any connection to apartheid in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Who was discussing apartheid, and I was like, I just, is this your conversation? Is this something that you should be talking about? Why don't you save those things for, you know, we said this when we first came in, which is like, you know, the thing is how amazing this world of podcasting is.
Yeah.
But the key is to make sure that if you're going to become a podcaster, is to do a podcast about something you're passionate about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the negative side of, and the real damage of podcasts is the amount of people now talking about stuff they have no knowledge on. But or they're just talking because they have to talk. And then everyone takes that as an opinion or as a fact. And it's the same with social media. I feel social media has got to the point where it's given me a whole career. It's allowed me to meet my partner, all things like that. But I genuinely think it's doing more negative than positive now. I think it's crossed that line that it's so damaging to how it's moulding our minds and the way we think and the way we know that if we write brave on our leg and strip naked, you know, all these things are more damage. And podcasting is one that's on the verge of that. I love that there's that we can have these scientists and experts have these huge platforms, and people who wouldn't have had a platform before have these amazing platforms. But a lot of the biggest podcasts, and again, including mine at times, is a load of people talking about shit they've got no qualification to speak on. And
yeah.
That worries me. That's what social media is as well. It's everyone's opinion is now worth so much. It's like, no, sometimes your opinion, you're allowed it, but it's not really worth anything.
I think
you're not an expert on it.
I think an experience of a situation can also give you knowledge to talk about it. I think that so like an experience or as you said, some sort of qualification in the thing for absolute certain.
Yeah.
But you're so many people that are talking about stuff that they have neither of those things for.
Yeah,
and it's because, oh, this is a popular subject, I'm going to go with that because that'll make this thing successful. Yeah. And I think that because of social media, people have lost their passion. I've lost what passion is.
Yeah.
To be able to look at something and love it without thinking about how other people might perceive your passion. To be able to go, what is it that I really, really love? What do I love to do?
Yeah.
And when you find that, I feel like that is when you will find the thing that will make you success.
Yeah.
Is when you can really close your eyes and think, what is it that I really love to do? And I'd do it even if no one was watching me. And it's, you know, and that's where you'll find the thing that you're good at.
It's absolutely
not forcing it on you because you saw other people do it and you want it. To think about, what do I love to do? My dad's passion is football.
Yeah.
He loves it. He played a bit when he was younger. He loves it. He's recently retired. My dad would love to spend the rest of his life travelling the world watching football.
Yeah.
And it will bring him more joy than his job did for 42 years.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the thing that social media doesn't do, because popularity has always been the sort of teat of Satan. Everyone was a suckle at it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I watched it. Being someone like yourself that wasn't very popular at school, it meant that you could look upon popular people and look at all the flaws of being popular. And it's meant now that I'm not easily flattered by popularity at all. Like, I don't have cool groups I hang out in, and I keep similar friends, and I have like witty banter with people online so everyone can see that I'm like with the, I don't like, I, if I interact with someone, it's because I like them and they're a nice person, but there's no like, completely. There's no, I don't have any agenda way. Yeah. And I'm sure that, you know, some people from the outside might see it, think that I have, but I can't have an agenda because I can't sleep at night.
Yeah,
if I completely. Think I'm false in any way, I feel like I feel awful, and I don't feel like I'm a, it's the only thing I can do in my life is be passionate, and if I don't have passion, I don't have a life.
It's key there. The thing that you would want to do, even if no one was watching, is absolutely key. And it's one of the things when I was saying again before we started that when I was speaking at a thing recently about starting podcasts, I was like, the key has to be that you just want to do it, and it doesn't matter, because then hopefully it will find that success and it will get to where you want it to be. But you need to be in a position where it's like, no, I'm going to be doing it anyway. I love it. I love having these conversations. I love meeting these people.
You can tell you do
that
as well.
Needs to be that needs to be the reason for it. And then if it's a success, then that's a great bonus. That goes on top.
Doing this because you like getting to know people, you like talking to people, and you like finding out. Like, I find people fascinating. You know, talking to, my favourite thing is talking to normals. Like, there's nothing more better than talking to someone who doesn't do this job or have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I love, you know, my brother, for example, he's an electrician, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again. But like, my brother he doesn't really come to my gigs. And I said to him, why don't you come to my gigs? And he said, well, you don't watch me do electrics.
Yeah,
and perfect. And I love shit like that. Yeah. I love that he doesn't care. I yeah. love that nothing phases him.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, I went to a friend's leaving. She's going away for 5 weeks and her family threw a huge party. She had a brain tumour like my sister. They knew each other when she was younger. And she's never been anywhere, and she was with a shit husband who was, I think, a bit abusive, and she left him, and it's been like this real empowering thing for her. And she's going away for just 5 weeks, and the whole family threw a party. And then I sort of arrived to say goodbye to, I was in Bristol visiting, so I thought I'll pop in and see her. She was so touched I was there. But like, it was a normal party with normal people, all having a Chinese
yeah.
in Cathay's Rendezvous in Bristol. And it was just like, and the conversations they were having were like, they were lovely and real. And you know, with all this fucking Brexit shit, some absolute mess. But the yeah. one thing I think has been the most troubling for me is this segregation that we have between the left and the right, or yeah. the Leave and the Remain, because left yeah. and right is not applicable anymore.
Yeah.
But this, and this
left is separating itself as we speak.
It's ridiculous.
As we record now, so it's, yeah, yeah. it's all just, yeah.
It's all dismantled, and I feel like that what happens when you separate people is you weaken the middle, you yeah. make a vulnerability, and then people like, dare I say it, Hitler, are the types yeah. of people that come in and abuse that.
And exploit that.
And I think that there is a divide in this country between intelligent people and people that haven't been educated. And I think sometimes my lovely fellow educated university arty people can be slightly unforgiving
yeah.
of people they don't understand or have any experience of.
Yeah,
you know, like, we all take the piss out of Jeremy Kyle and stuff like that, but it's Jeremy Kyle. That those are real people. They're yeah. real people having real existences. And just because it's nothing like you would, how you would live your life, doesn't mean it's wrong.
Yeah, and what people have to realise as well is there's going to be people several runs above you in the intelligence ladder who will be looking at you in the same way.
And you'd hate the
thought
idiot.
Of that. Yeah, you'd hate the thought of that, being like, no, I'm sentient. I know what's going on.
I got 100 likes on Facebook the other yeah. day for a status update I did.
Yeah.
But how often have you engaged? This is the thing I always say, is we're never going to get anyone to change their mind about stuff if we tell them they're stupid or they're wrong.
Yeah.
The only way you can make people change their mind is if you can change them like a Trojan horse of liberalism,
yeah.
which is like, that's why I decided to do the Sun Bingo adverts, and I get yeah. a fucking lot of abuse for it. I hate it. There was a man at Christmas who wrote...
I mean, they're on constantly. It's, you know, I get
it's
it.
It's all the time. I'm so sorry. I got paid so that. Well.
Yeah, they're right.
But the reason I chose it was, number one, the money was great, but the second reason was I was like, that's an audience that could come to a show of mine
yeah.
and like hear me wabble on about gays like I do
yeah.
and like all the quirky fun things I do, and then maybe like Gary from Wigan ain't going to be homophobic one time. I feel like that's my little thing I can do,
yeah,
which is like encourage, like I, like this year's poster is going to have a quote from The Guardian and the Daily Mail on it.
Wow.
Like I feel like, I said,
that's so important, right? To bring those crowds
together
and go, right, well, let's all, you might not agree with everything in this show, but at least you're going to hear it and you're going to discuss it and have an opinion.
If we can't have the same opinions on stuff, how about we all laugh at the same stuff? How about yeah. things like, you know, humour, laughing is a much easier way of getting people to sort of agree with you than it is making people angry or cry. Yeah. Like, anger is such a pointless emotion
yeah.
with regards to all this stuff as
well. I think it's all fueled, and it's been going that way for a long time, and again, I seem to be putting all the blame on social media for everything, but I think social media fuels
it's
it
fault.
That we've pushed so far towards this tribalism, and that's what makes it dangerous. And the easiest example I can think of before it was serious tribalism was Android and Apple phones. People would be so like,
yeah.
that's the enemy. If, oh, you've got an Apple phone, fucking hell, seller. Or you've got an Android. Oh, they're so shit.
That's
and
it's mad. Like,
and you're angry at someone else for having a different phone to you. Why are you aligning yourself with the phone that you've got? It's not important. And I think there was a lot of things like that. And I guess you could go back to Sega and Nintendo and stuff like that, where you'd have this tribalism and loyalty. And that has then gone even further into our politics and into the way we are online, that and it's fueled hugely by celebrities. It's like, I like that celebrity. So therefore, if you disagree with that celebrity, you're the enemy. It's like, no, I might agree with, like, a Joe Rogan is a great example. I'm a huge fan of Joe Rogan. I've been in his podcast years ago. He's the one that encouraged me to start this. There's tons of stuff that he says that I don't agree with and that I think he's ignorant on. There's even more stuff that he's far more informed on than me. I learn from him. It's amazing. But that's fine. It shouldn't be you're either agree with everything that person says or nothing. There should be a gap in between.
I've got friends who are prolifically anti everything I believe in. Mm. I've got a friend, I can't even say who it is, because if I said who it is, I'd get in so much trouble because of the internet. Yeah. But I've got someone I've known for 12 years. I've known I've known their partner, I've known their children, yeah. And I can't even genderize the person because I can't even say what or this person does. But I've known this person for a really long time. I've known them from when I used to live in Bristol, and they're totally anti everything I believe in. But if I surrounded myself with all people all the time who thought like me and acted like me, I would be an incredibly bored person because I already have myself. I don't need any more versions of myself.
Yeah.
Different people enrich my life. People's stories, people's experiences, like people's jobs. Like when you're on stage and you ask someone what job they do, and some people like really cringe when they say like, I work at Marks and Spencer's, and I'm like, you're having an experience of life that so many of these other middle class knobheads that I know I will never have. You are talking to people. You're filling your world up with other. All we've got is each other. Yeah. But a lot of people are just like, no, I just want to be ahead of the. I want to be in charge. And I feel like what you were saying about Joe Rogan being wrong sometimes, I agree with.
Yeah.
Do you know what type of person finds it even harder to be in the wrong? Is women. I find it really difficult. I feel like sometimes that other women will judge other women for being wrong in a really intense way rather than being a bit, you know, sort of a bit like laughing about something. Like you can be really outed as a bird if you do the different stuff that the other birds are doing. And so sometimes I feel like I can't. I've been accused of being a Tory before because I don't immediately assign myself with left wing politics.
Yeah.
I'm not a Tory, and I also don't vote for Jeremy Corbyn. Apparently, neither do seven of his other of his members of his party. But I have, at the moment for me, there's no politician representing what it is that I think is a value for that will help the country. Yeah, like,
I completely
why
understand
there can't
that.
Be some, I know this probably sounds stupid and naive and idiotic, but why can't there be a coalition between Labour and Conservative?
Yeah.
If it is 48, 52, whatever it was meant to be, then why don't they just get in a room and argue about it rather than making us do it?
Well, that's it. The big issue I have is that a lot of people will say, there's not a political party that aligns with me correctly, so I will go with who's the nearest or the lesser of two evils or whatever else. But the problem for me is in this country, we don't have a political system that would allow good political parties, coalitions, kind of a spread. Because again, you're completely right. The UK as people don't have one thought.
No.
Therefore, why would we have democratic. One person as leader? Because that's not representing everything. It's ludicrous, and in America even more so. A country of that size, the thought that there's a leader, that there's one person. You know
and
what
only
I mean?
Two
I know
options.
Parties, but yeah, the two-party politics, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, it's crazy how these things are. And there's the fact that we, number one, if you say anything against a democracy, then that's a sin. I love democracies, but people don't seem to realise that there's fucking hundreds of different ocracies. There's hundreds of versions of democracies. There's kind of Athenian democracies, which, again, you can pick apart because in those days, it was only the rich who had a say. Women didn't have a say. You know, there's loads of stuff there. But of all the people who had a say under an Athenian democracy, it was kind of like jury duty. So you say there's 100 of you, you're in charge for this situation and you're picked at random and you have to kind of say and decide. And then the next month, there's a completely new 100 who are selected and you have a say on this. And that's exciting because it's the only way that you remove corruption. Because if you're the people in power, then power corrupts. If everyone's in power, and it's just random.
It's random.
Here we go.
Let these people decide.
And things like that are fascinating, but we never discuss anything other than, well, it's democracy. Are you saying that you're against democracy? Maybe against our kind of democracy, our version that's so weighted and has stupid kind of rules that more people can vote for one thing, but the people in the right place voted for the other thing, therefore the other thing wins. It's like,
it's weird.
All that stuff is just, it's ridiculous. So yeah, it's a bizarre political system. But
it's really weird, and I think that it's all very confusing at the moment, and everyone, there's a lot of hysteria and a lot of blame happening, and I just feel like, just look within yourself and see what you can be doing rather than start blaming other people.
Yeah.
I gig up and down the country all the time. So I see, I'm not just in London.
Yeah.
I live in Essex and I gig all the way to the top of the country and all the way back down to the country. I see all sorts of different people. I meet people from all sorts of different walks of life. I used to work in Asda. My mum still does. My experience of life is very different from the world that I find myself in. So it means that there's part of me that has incredibly liberal views about stuff, and then there's also part of me that has conservative views about things.
Yeah.
But there's not a single political party that I'm not on my own on the fence.
Yeah.
It's, and also that expression, I'm not on any fence. I am if I'm on a fence, I'm leaning on it with absolute style, mate, looking like an absolute don. I've got a hat on. I look a bit like James Dean because I've gone for the full look.
Yeah.
And there's no vagueness about what me I'm waiting
that
which
fence
I think
is the perfect height as well, just to get a really good lean, so you're not hunched over and but you're not stretching either.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a fucking great fence. there's I mean, we're kind of at the hour mark, but I mean, we've got a bit of time left. I will be out of your hair in time for you to head into what you're gonna do, but there's a few things I want to jump back to. There's one thing that you said earlier that I just want to touch on. Do you remember what albums you were listening to on that trip through Europe, where you were kind of, you found your alone time for the first time? Because it is particularly, I remember when I was doing a tour once in Europe, and again at a time where you don't just have every song in the world on your phone, and I got mocked because I was touring as a rapper touring Europe in my band.
What were you listening to?
I listened 12 times in a row. I listened to a Cyndi Lauper Greatest Hits.
Oh, you legend.
Because it's such a brilliant Greatest Hits. And the people I was on tour with, like, are you going to change it at any point? It's like, no, I want to listen to it again. It's just, it's perfect for me now. And it was exactly the same. I was sitting there in a van full of people having some alone time, having several days of alone time, just really thinking and getting through everything in that way. And it's stuck with me. So I wondered if you kind of, The albums that were with you then stuck with you.
I had two albums that I listened to. One of them was Melody Gardot,
right.
My One and Only Thrill. She had I think this is the story, but she had an accident that, hang on, let me just read this because this is a good little fact about her.
Yeah.
Yeah, accident and therapy. So while riding her bicycle in Philadelphia in 2003, Gardot was struck by an SUV and sustained head, spinal and pelvic injuries.
Wow.
She was confined to a hospital bed for a year and needed to relearn simple tasks, and so was left oversensitive to light and sound. Encouraged by a physician?
Yep, that's the one.
Whatever that is.
Near enough.
Who believed music would help her brain, Gardot learned to hum and then to sing to a tape recorder. And so basically this is the... She retaught herself how to sing via
wow.
her own music, and she's
That's
got
amazing.
She's got such a beautiful voice, and it's a bit romantic.
Yeah.
I am the lover of the romantic music.
Yeah,
I like romantic music, and I like a good bass line.
Yeah.
on stuff. So like I like a good dirty. What was I listening? It's not even. It wasn't even dirty. What was I listening to yesterday that had a good dung da dung da dung da dung? Like Horse with No Name, but like A Place with No Name, is
right.
it? I
yep.
can't remember it. So I was listening to that album, and I was also listening to, let me get the right album. So John Grant.
Right.
Pale Green Ghosts.
Right.
I listened to on that journey as well.
Yeah.
So that was another...
It's perfect for soundtracking a journey, right?
Well, like,
kind
as
of emotional...
I was in Lanzarote, driving along black sand, listening to Greatest Motherfucker.
Love it.
And I listened to, was it Melody Gardot, John Grant, and who else would have been in that? Who else would have been in that? I've got, like, my iTunes is basically everything, and yeah. I randomise. I don't listen to...
Yeah.
I'm not a full album kind of girl. I have, like, it on Scramble, so it would have been lots of different stuff.
I'm that now, and it kills me, because I love albums, and I hate that art form is dying, but it kills me a little bit that I prefer just to shuffle through things.
Rich recently played me the because we so now I'm doing it more because we play vinyl, so that's that shelf over there is full of Rich's vinyl. And so the other day he played me the Communards.
Yep.
What a great album, and the whole thing as well.
Yeah.
What I can't remember what album it was. It's up there. Hold this a sec.
Yeah, the Communards absolutely amazing. And particularly with, obviously, we touched upon you kind of doing a lot of stuff in the drag world and in very much friendly gay worlds. And the Communards, and particularly Jimmy
Somerville.
Somerville. I didn't realise until I was watching a documentary how important Small Town Boy was as just... And you listen to it now and you realise that at that point, the gay scene had blown up, but it was all very... It's great to be gay. Look how wonderful we are. And that wasn't the experience of a lot of gay people at that point. Small Town Boy was this heartbreaking, beautiful song of feeling ostracised, feeling alone because of something as intrinsic as your sexuality. And I'd never thought... I'd always thought, oh, this is a cool song. And then you hear it in that context and go, oh, yeah, actually, all Frankie Goes to Hollywood and all that was all like, yeah, we're going to fuck and fist and do what we want. It's going to be great. And that was, again, that's a very London-centric experience of the gay scene at that point.
Yeah.
As soon as you get half hour out of London, that wasn't the world for... So, yeah, amazing stuff. Can I recommend a song or an artist to you?
Yeah, go on.
Because they're an artist, and a few people know where I'm going to go with this, because they're an artist, they're a pair of artists that I think get completely looked over because they are kind of seen as a comedy band, but I believe that they have written my two favourite love songs.
Oh, right, go
of
on.
All love songs. It's The Proclaimers.
Oh, wow, really?
They're genuinely, and I was on board with it being 500 miles, they're a bit of a joke, and I saw them at South by Southwest in Texas 1 year, and in America, they don't have that kind of joke feel of their Scottish, or the accent's weird. To Americans, all English accents are weird. So it's this weird thing. But they've got a song called Then I Met You. And they've got
this on my...
And they've got a song called Sunshine on Leith.
On Leith?
Leith, yeah.
Oh, in Edinburgh?
Yeah. So they're from Edinburgh.
That's
they're
where
from
I
Leith.
Live when I go to Edinburgh. Yeah. So that'll be...
So Sunshine on Leith, I genuinely think... is one of the most beautiful love songs. And Then I Met You.
It's in a movie.
Yeah, or there was a film made of Sunshine on Leaf. It was a musical. But the thing with Sunshine on Leaf, and this is a bit of a spoiler now, but I was listening to it loads, and I realised the reason it's such a unique love song is it says, thank you. And that's so rare in love songs. Yeah. I love you, I need you, you're everything is amazing, but thank you. No one says that in a love song. And he's thanking her for being there, for being alive, for giving him all this. And it's such a beautiful thing. And the pair of them as well, again, knowing that you're a fan of vocals, the pair of them have just got the most impeccable voices and control of their voices. Their control on When I Met You and Sunshine on Leaf is just, it's mind-blowing. And yeah.
I love a great vocal. I'm really going to listen to it. Yeah. I love a recommendation of a good love song.
It's good because as well, because they're the two twins and they look funny. And it's like, no, honestly, once you get over that, they're this amazing.
You're not the first person that's told me to give The Proclaimers a chance.
Yeah.
So that will definitely be a recommendation I keep.
So another thing I wanted to loop back to, and we won't stay on it for ages. I'll recommend that people check you out on Griefcast. With Carrie, because it was absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
I feel it was such a defining one of Griefcast for me, because your approach to grief completely negated the need for people to pull that face.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was just an openness of this is a thing, and there was humour in it. But so, I mean, I'm going to try not to pull the face now. But you've mentioned and your sister a couple of times.
Yeah, I talk about it as much as I can. I spoke about this with my therapist. I went, sometimes... So I did something on BBC called BBC Ideas, and it was a funny thing about grief. And I worried that I was talking about my sister too much. And then my therapist said to me, she went, why wouldn't you talk about her? Your story and the way that you speak about her is empowering for other people.
Yeah,
so, of course, it's because I hear so many people... Like, it took me five, six years to talk about her before I did. And I feel like that's a good amount of time.
100%.
People are doing it within months of their loved ones dying. And I'm like, you have not...
Particularly in comedy.
In comedy.
Particularly at the Fringe.
My God, like...
Is it a Fringe show if someone hasn't died to make it? That's kind of a key now.
Yeah, well, what happens if you've had no dead loved ones?
Yeah, what the hell are you going to do your Fringe show about?
Well, do you want a Lindor chocolate ball?
I always want a Lindor.
Yeah, there's strawberries and cream or orange.
I'll go for orange.
There you are.
Have you had the mint ones yet?
Oh my God, they're insane.
The next level, aren't they? I bought them because they were on offer, and I was going to see a film. And again, of all the things to eat in the cinema, noisy, unwrap each individual one, I thought I'll have a couple. I ate the whole box in this film, and it was amazing.
Mm, I love chocolate. So I think it's important to talk about her.
Yeah.
I think I said this on group. She's not your average dead person.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't achieve anything before she died. There's no romanticism.
So how old was she when...
She was 27 when she died.
Yeah.
I was 25. She just, like, sort of just died one day. It was as innocuous as that. She was living in Portsmouth with her husband, and then he went fishing and forgot his tackle box and came back. And she was fitting on the carpet, and she had a brain tumour, and she went to hospital, went into a coma, and then we... all arrived, I was last, and then she died. And it was as unremarkable as that.
Mm.
Then went down to car park, and that boyfriend, he was with me a month, and then she died. That boyfriend I was speaking about.
I mean, fair play, that's a tough one on his part. It's like, right, okay, this is now... It turns out it's serious then.
So he juggled for me in the car park downstairs. He just juggled. He had juggling balls in this, but he was really good at it. He did cascades and stuff. He was really good at it.
I mean, I loved how you dropped that out as if it was the most normal and
just casual a bit of juggling
thing.
In the car
so
park.
He juggled for me,
and then she's dead. And then it's been now. It's coming up to on April 24th. It'll be. It would have been. If this is out after, on April 24th, it had have been 8 years since she died, and it gets easier. Becomes normal that they're dead. That's the best bit about grieving. It's when it's normal that they're not around anymore, because I think that the initial stages of it are, oh, they're not here, this feels weird. Oh, they're not here, this feels weird. And that's what you're constantly reminded of. But the day it becomes feels absolutely, they should have died, or this is just what life is like. That's the bit where you can cope. Still feels shit.
It'd be weird if they were here now, because...
Yeah.
So much has changed.
She wouldn't recognise it. Like, I think of her in this world that we're in now, because the world's changed massively since 2011. Mm-hmm. There's lots of stuff she wouldn't recognise. And it's funny, she'll always be my older sister, but I'm now older than her.
Yeah, that's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it weird? She'll always be my older sister, but she never got to 28.
Yeah.
But she, you know, like... She's brilliant. She's one of those people that I was talking about earlier on. She'd have voted leave.
Yeah.
She would have.
Yeah.
Most of my family did.
Yeah.
My dad didn't. He works for a European country. So, not a company.
Yeah.
But most of the other people in my life, they all voted leave, and it's because of their experiences and stuff. And I really value my sister and people like her. And I didn't used to. I used to run away from it.
Yeah.
I used to run away from my roots. I don't know if you did that.
Constantly.
Yeah, like, I used to change my accent as well.
Yeah.
I'm in a voiceover for Lazy... It's called Lazy Boy Garage. It's on UK TV. And I went to have a look at what people were saying about it. Majority is that it's been really well received. But there's some people that are like, I find her voice annoying. Like, fuck off, mate. Fucking suck a dick. I'm so bored of this, like, the way that people are on Twitter. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
Like, can't you just shut up?
Yeah. This is now just going off on a tangent, but did you enjoy this country? Because I absolutely adored it. I found it out of nowhere. And
Kerry!
From touring as well, I'd spent a lot of time in the West Country and things like that. And you
do they
never
listen to
hear
this
it
podcast?
Represented. I don't know.
If they do, Kerry,
yeah,
Charlie, Curtin, I'm literally everything about me needs to be on This Country. Please let me be on it. I mean, I've asked enough people.
Yeah.
To do it. I've literally, I do comedy and I sound like this.
Yeah, it's perfect,
it's
right?
It's perfect. It's like, you know.
Isn't it the best? Isn't it the best to have seen that?
Oh my God, it's such a great show.
Yeah.
Tomato!
Me and my brother stumbled upon it, and it was when the first episode was airing for the first time, and it's not because we're hip and down, we just happened to flick to it. And we had 10 minutes like, is this a documentary or a, like people talk about with Blair Witch or The Office originally. We had that with this kind of, like, I'm not sure if this is real or
those two are so
not.
Brilliant.
And they're just genius. Oh, I love it.
It took them 8 years to get that. Took them a really long time, and it was
Charlie was on the Two Shot podcast, and it's fantastic. And they really discussed that kind of how shit the first iteration of it was, and how it had to fail to then work.
It's a great show. What a great place the West Country is. Yeah. It's, you know, yes, my voice may be annoying, but I've got more joy in my voice than anyone who's any RP accents. Like, how dreary.
Yeah.
Like, well, I've got a little lilt on the end of it. I say words funny.
Yeah.
I could say like a really innocuous sentence, but I get a word wrong. And then it's, I like things that are different.
Yeah.
You know, if someone sounds different or does something different, I like being surprised. I'd hate to meet the same person all the time.
Do you feel it has to make you work harder in comedy? And again, this is going to sound really weird, but there's a few people, Tim Key's an example, just the way he speaks just cracks me up. I just adore it. He could read, it's a cliche, he could read the phone book and I'll be in tears of laughter, but he does then have to craft and make these amazing bits of work because it's literally just anything. And do you feel that because you can just say a fairly innocuous sentence and make it hilarious that you have to go, right, I need to make sure I'm not just going, well, here's me and my funny voice.
Well, my new show that I'm writing at the moment, which is called The Ballad of Kylie Jenner's Old Face, is me trying to take myself seriously as a stand-up.
Yeah.
So I've come to the understanding that as a woman in 2019, unless you were like shaking your booty in a thong on stage with your cheating husband, a la Beyonce, or you're not wearing a turtleneck trying to get people to listen to your serious points of view, you're not a successful woman.
Yeah.
So this year, I'm removing all of the sequins and all of the glamour from my performances, and there will be no songs.
Oh, really?
No more songs for Jade.
I mean, that's a big step, because again, it's something that we can just touch on quickly, is your shows have very much not been just a regular stand-up show. There's been a whole thing going on. I was going to ask how touring like that is. I used to tour with a guy called B Dolan, and for a while he had a character called Bomzo the Clown, and he's a rapper, but he'd have white face paint with red bits and all this. And the amount of impact on the stress of touring life that added was next level. Hotel rooms covered in paint everywhere. Just adding theatrics makes generally touring a lot harder. And that's if you're in a band. So if generally all the rest of your peers, their touring is turn up and pick up a microphone, and your touring is
wind signed, throne,
outfits, every
boyfriend in a morph suit,
yes,
Richard Thomas playing piano, a plant, a table.
Yeah.
Like, all of these things make it absolutely hell.
Yeah.
And I haven't really made a show before that has been able to be toured because of this.
Yeah.
So this new show is part me taking the piss out of this thing where women got to be all serious and shit, and at the same time is actually making a show that I can tour. Because I'd love
fascinating to find that, to find a show that you can make that allows you to remove those things for a reason rather than just go, oh, it's fucking, it's
I want a tour. Yeah, no, I only ever do stuff organically. I never want anyone to look at my decisions that I've made to see, like, I sort of want to cover up my journey by, you know, every decision I make, I can justify why I've done that in terms of the narrative or what it is that I'm talking about. And there's loads of meta things in this show, which is like, at the same time as me trying to be serious in my craft, the whole way through the show, things are going to try and stop me from being serious. Yeah. The old Jade's going to keep coming out. I've got my boyfriend who wears an all-in-one black morph suit. It's my special effects guy in it, Pudding. Yeah. He's going to spend the entire show trying to like keep me, the real me,
yeah.
whilst I do essentially a keynote speech on feminism.
Yeah.
But the keynote speech on feminism will be me talking about how at the moment the demographic of people in this country that I worry about the most are working class teenagers. I feel that at the moment all the role models for these girls are all these bitches that are all on all fours in thongs, singing songs, Ariana Grande, Beyonce, all of these role models who are like basically saying, if you want to be a billionaire bitch like me, you need to dress like this and you need to get lip fillers and you need to get plastic surgery and all this sort of stuff. And I believe, and what they're saying is that if you want to be confident and empowered, get all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I believe, because of all the stuff I said earlier on, even though I've been told by people that I'm wrong, I know I'm not.
Yeah.
And that is worth more than any lip filler could ever.
Yeah,
if you can get
completely.
your teenage girls to believe that, then your teenage girls will grow up to be really responsible women who get shit done, who can handle things, who can help their men be better men and raise, you know, you're not going to be raising women in the correct way if you're telling them that, do you know what, the most... Forbes magazine said that Kylie Jenner was a self-made billionaire. She's not a self-made billionaire.
Yeah.
Her sister had to get banged on Pornhub for her to be a self-made billionaire. Her father that wasn't her sister's father had to keep a murderer out of prison in order to be a self-made billionaire.
Yeah.
And she and in the paper magazine, she's like saying that, yeah, no, my parents cut me off at 15 and told me I had to make my own way. Oh, you poor little street urchin. What did you have, 7 million in the bank from mummy and daddy?
Yeah.
Like this isn't the, and what's happening is these images and messages at the moment are all mixed up, and the people that are lapping it up isn't us because we're like, oh, this is all bullshit. It's these teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
I had a teenage girl in my house. I won't say when because she'll know when who it is. I had a teenage girl here, and she just like the nails, the eyebrows, the hair, the insecurity, the sort of like the like her parents had got her a present for Christmas that was like a really cool present, and like she sort of had it hidden away, and I said, oh, what did you get? And she I got this, and I was like, it's because what you really want is you want to get a bloody bit of filler in your lips.
Yeah.
Because Kylie Jenner has convinced the entire world that she made her lips big by a pencil.
It's mad because I would feel okay with it if they weren't the only thing being put forward. Again, I think all of these things
are fine as long as there are balance.
If that's what you want, and if there's balance and there's other options put at the top, and not just other options, it's bullshit to say, oh, there are other inspirational people, but not on that level. It's all good to say, here's a great doctor, but kids aren't hearing of that doctor. It's on these levels.
Ariana Grande recently on Billboard 100 has the top three songs on Billboard 100.
Yeah.
The last time that was achieved was in 1964 or 1969 by the Beatles.
Wow.
Ariana Grande has beaten the Beatles. And let's all listen to her music. It's not because of any musical quality. It's all because of sexualization. Yeah. She doesn't look older than 15 years old.
Mm.
Anyone that is finding that girl attractive has got to have some serious words with, unless right. they are 15.
Yeah.
But I've got to be having some serious words with myself because that girl does not look legal.
Mm.
If she came into my club when I used to be a bouncer, I'd fucking ID her.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
she,
yeah,
the
yeah,
challenge
yeah,
25
yeah,
bit,
yeah.
like talk about challenge 18 on her. Like, and it's,
yeah.
and no one's, and there's no discussion on this stuff. It's just sort
yeah.
of, like that's wrong.
Yeah.
Like we shouldn't be having her. Like an empowering woman is a woman stood with a microphone in her hand,
yep.
not one with a microphone in her hand on all fours,
yeah.
or one in front of 66,000 people at West Ham Stadium
yeah.
being groped by her husband who recently cheated on her in front of
right.
the words "feminist,"
yep.
which was Beyonce's concert
yeah,
I went
yeah,
to
yeah,
see.
Yeah. Cool.
I just I feel like I will obviously make all this stuff funny, but I feel like there's there's just a lot of false shit going on because
yeah.
and attaching themselves. It's okay for this false shit to happen as well because it always has done. It's always been false advertising to make things, you know, sex used to sell and now it's tears.
Yeah.
Like for women, it used to be tits.
Yeah, yeah,
now
yeah,
it's
yeah,
all
yeah.
about women crying.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I do you remember Melissa Messenger?
Yes.
Now she cries, you know,
right.
you've got loose women.
yeah, yeah, definitely. Of
but
course.
I feel like what's happened is you have all of this fake shit, but now they're attaching themselves to messages that are really important.
Yeah.
Feminism and women not being a second citizen to the point where, you know, we don't get locked into cars while guys get their dicks out. Mm-hmm. That stuff will only happen if we show girls, oh, do you know what? That's not cool. Even though, but like, then the music videos and the imagery alongside all of these artists, it's not responsible. It's not like you know, she's literally just selling an art. She did a song about like, I got 7 rings for all my friends and look at all my money and all my jewels. And I'm like, you've got like a load of girls looking up to you, or be like, oh, okay, so what am I going to do? If I just get some surgery and then I just like do an Instagram account and I get my ass out on there, and you know, it's fine that there's a load of probably paedophiles watching all this stuff, but it means that I could probably have this sort of life, and I can. That's the sort of thing that is happening when people are watching people like Ariana Grande do well, because it's not her music.
And what's her music interesting?
If her music was good,
yeah,
I'd shut up.
But what's interesting is it's exciting because it does feel as if you're the perfect person to talk about this because of what you were saying about bringing an audience that's coming to a show that's got a Guardian quote and a Daily Mail quote on the poster, because you're going to see some of that tribalism. Anytime you start to speak against Queen Beyonce, there's going to be some people who are like...
They came.
How dare you? Yeah, but equally, it's like, no, everyone should... Everyone's idols should be questioned and should stand up to scrutiny and should... It's fine to be flawed. For example, a Beyonce shouldn't be flawless and perfect, but we should be allowed to acknowledge that she's not flawless and perfect.
Yeah.
It's not asking her to be flawless and perfect. It's being able to say, I only agree with that, and it not be a sin, you know?
I think it was really powerful that she forgave her husband in front of everyone on that on Lemonade. I really enjoyed Lemonade, the visual album and the songs, and I thought that was a really powerful message that she put across, and I was like, yeah, that's you using your platform well, showing everyone how to forgive and forget with someone who loves you and someone who's messed up and you've forgiven them. But then they just took it too far, and I was like, we don't need to see you being groped by him.
It's kind of the broad strokes of marketing of everything, because to use the two comparisons here, there is an empowerment in Ariana Grande, I can't even say her name, her whole thank you next thing, but there's also a hideousness in it because it's so callous and soulless and
dismissive.
But again, it's a balance. If it had been, it's great to say, don't be weighed down by someone else, be very, I'm me, and I'm, you know, I'm enough for me, so thank you, next. It's not going to break me. But equally, there's no nuance in it. It's such broad strokes. It's like, fuck that loser.
And the other thing is no one has commented on this at all. She's got 2 ex-boyfriends she's written music about. Mm. And both those ex-boyfriends have had a drug issue to the point where he killed himself. Mm. And then the last boyfriend, last Christmas, wrote a suicidal note on Instagram.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you write a suicidal note on Instagram if the entire world and the Kardashians were saying thank you next about your relationship?
I would want to quickly add as well, though, that it's social media and the whole market machines of the music industry that are more to blame here than a young girl in Ariana.
It's not her fault.
Ariana Grande.
She's the cog.
Just cause she's part of it, and she's the one at the front. But it's everyone else going, oh, this is marketable. Heartbreak is marketable, and not realizing that there's nuances to her. It's interesting because I was thinking of 2 people when you were saying about how you couldn't tour shows. I remember there's two people I used to gig with back in the day, literally in pubs, and one of them was Paloma Faith, and I love her, and it was, you'd watch it and I'd say to her at the time, I was like, you need to get huge because you can't do
these elaborate
shows in pubs, it doesn't work. And the opposite of that, and I'm going to be careful with this because I know it's someone you're a big fan of, but was Adele, who would literally be there with a guitar and a mic
and a jumper,
and that's it, and that's all she needed. And I remember when she was going on Jules Holland the first time, and I knew a few of the people at her label and a lot of her kind of the management and Adele, and there was all this talk of, right, do we add an orchestra, do we add a band? And it was Richard Russell at XL who was really adamant. He was like, no, just put her out there with a guitar. And she had to follow Paul McCartney with Jules Holland and all this, and then it just cut to this girl on a stool with a guitar, and she stole the show. So it was that beauty of finding that thing that you can go, I don't need anything else. I can make this. So it's having that. It's wonderful to have that flamboyance of Paloma, but then it's equally almost more exciting and moving to go, right, it can be just this. This is all it can. This is all it needs to be.
Stripping it back is always, that's what I'm doing this year, is I'm stripping back all that stuff to prove that I can actually be as engaging without all the flim flam.
Yeah.
I really like, do you know what I really liked? I love, what's the song? It's called, it's a pop song.
Yeah.
My Ex by Jessie J. Right. I don't know if you saw the video for it as well. Yeah. It's just some, she's a really great actress. In the, like the camera's just, and the song's just cute. And, and it's like, and it's, it's sort of one what we were talking about, you know, the dismissive nature of Thank You Next. It was exactly what Thank You Next is not, which is like, you know, like empowering about something that hasn't worked out. And I think that her the cog that Ariana is in has created this will create this army of girls that don't take responsibility for the failure of their own relationships, like, which they have to, because women are just as bad as men.
Yeah.
I make a joke about this in my show, which is the difference between women and men is women do psychological trauma, but it's not illegal. But women do really shit stuff to men. They pretend that they're on the pill and get themselves pregnant to be able to trap a man. Like, they do mad shit. They go for men that have wives and have girlfriends and stuff because they're insecure. You know, like, we're as flawed as the blokes are. And I think sometimes that for this, like, marketing cog, that's what I love about Adele, is that she...
Well, that's what I was going to say. The reason Adele came to mind there, I never clarified. I didn't want to just make a name drop there. But it was because she... It felt like she popularised the heart-wrenching breakup song, but what the market
never
then
knew
failed
who he was.
that's exactly what the then marketing team failed to focus on, was it was anonymous. It wasn't this, look, that's the person I'm writing about, fuck them. It was like this, a mysterious man who's sitting there regretting.
You just know, out, you know, there's some guy cringing somewhere that he could have been like tapping up a multi-millionaire success who's got, who also, what I really love about her, she doesn't do fame.
Yeah.
She's so dignified. She's got her massive house, her great, and her husband is like this scruffy Etonian guy who runs a charity.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't do any of that stuff. Dignified, just her voice. And I went to see her show with my parents. I'd say she's got some great chat in her.
Yeah.
It, Adele, if you're listening, like, let me come and do some like lines for you. I would love to.
Completely. That'd
but I mean, I'm not criticising any, but I'll write you some cracking lines for your show. I was sat there going, you could say this now, and you could say that now, and you could say this. Because she's got this like warmth that... And that's what this country loves the most. The UK especially loves it. They love a bit of warmth. They love a girl that they could like...
Completely.
Warmth is so important. And I think that... And that's what I love about... I mean, there's some songs that I'm not massively fan of, and the popularity of some songs that she's had, I think, like Chill Out Babes, Hello was not her best.
Yeah.
Like, Send My Love to Your New Lover is like a far superior song to Hello.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was her first one and it went crazy and then everyone copied it and it was like a big viral hit and stuff.
Yeah.
But I love dignity and I love a little bit of class, and I love it from a working class bird as well.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing more classy than a working class girl that says fuck every other sentence, going, I'm not going to be falling out of cabs getting my fanny out.
And it makes, it genuinely, it adds to the impact. So when I was starting off, I've always had a lot of songs that are about heavy subjects, that are about suicide and about death and stuff like that. So I would always, particularly when I did my Edinburgh Fringe show, it was important to me to make a joke in between, because then it makes that impact so much harder. And it's similar. If Adele's going, fucking hell, look at this, and then hits you with this voice, the impact of that voice is so much grander, because it's like, oh, we were brought out of the geniusness of it, and it's just, oh, this is just a normal person going, fucking hell, I just spilt some of my beer, and then...
Well, my first show, I had basically 57 minutes of stand-up for my first show, and then I sing opera at the end.
Yeah.
So I'd had, like, I had told the story of me and my sister and us growing up together and how difficult it was being in the shadow of this really popular, like, when I talk about how my sister died. That's not the person I grew up with. She was two different people because of her brain tumour.
Yeah.
Changed her personality completely. But the first sister I had, she was really popular and everyone loved her and all the boys wanted to finger her. And like they'd come over my house just to go through her knicker drawer. And I was Janet Adams' sister. She used to fight all my battles for me, which is why I'm really, really bad. I like letting skinny bitches win my battles now. So I will say that I was triggered because of a personal thing, but I also mean it as well. I did have 25 years of my life where she fought my battles for me. So what I did is I did all the sort of working class conversations about me growing up with a sister, and then at the end I tell this story and I was like, so I sing O Mio Bambino Caro by Puccini. No one expects it. This Asda girl who's like, fuck this. So it's got that real Adele.
The show was
called 31 and I used her imagery
for it.
I found out, I put my face and Adele's face next to each other and I found out I'm literally one bottom lip filler away from looking just like her.
Amazing.
just literally my bottom lip. I won't be doing it though. As I've said earlier on, I will not be doing
at least until you've
fillers.
Got this show out of the way, right?
Yeah,
so you can make your point about it and then down the line. Line, you can go, all right, listen, I sort
if
that
I turn 56 and crow's feet happen, mate, I'm going to be an absolute hypocrite. But I finished it. And at the end of this song, after I've sang O Mio Bambino Caro, which is a really moving, beautiful aria, I say, and the first time, and I tell stories about how my sister took all the limelight. And I said to my mum, when I first sang this to my mother, I looked at her and she had tears in her eyes. And she said to me, your sister was always such a good singer. And that was the last line in the show.
I love it.
She wasn't actually. My sister was a terrible singer. My mum is absolutely chatting through her ass.
That's beautiful.
My sister did not sing opera without ever having a lesson. I would like to just let you know.
That's hello. That's a perfect note to end it on. I'll end by asking, what's ahead? Kind of, you're going to be touring. I mean, it's annoying. We've not talked about Good Omens at all, which is huge and wonderfully exciting and Neil Gaiman is amazing.
He's such a cool guy.
Let's quickly talk about that.
Yeah.
I auditioned for Good Omens.
And oh, did you?
It's one of the worst auditions I've ever had. And Neil was lovely about it because I once did the Time Warp with Neil on stage with Richard O'Brien. It's the only time I've met Neil, in fact. It was bizarre scenario. But anyway,
he's
amazing.
He's such a great guy. And he's become, when we did the filming, I barely saw him, but then he's become like a really nice guy. He helped me get to 10,000 followers on the, I did like a Jade to 10K. I was upset that I only had 7K followers. So I made everyone try and get me to 3K in 3 hours and it worked. Amazing. Although the drop off was quite upsetting. but he helped me do that. And he's like, he's such a terrific bloke. And also, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
The
bits I read of the script were just mind-blowingly good. I think I read the first episode or two episodes and it was just...
It's brilliant.
So good.
I'm in an episode with Miranda Richardson. I didn't have my scenes with Michael Sheen or David Tennant much. I know Michael Sheen through a friend of mine who's a comedian, but I didn't meet David Tennant, which was a real, because he was my huge crush when I was younger.
Right.
I wrote my letter once.
Amazing.
So we're not in the same scenes, which is a real shame, but I play a small role.
So he's your Barbara Streisand to your Richard E. Grant.
Yes, he is.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he is. That's a great analogy. Yeah, yeah. One day I'll see him. I never get starstruck by anyone.
Yeah.
I never, to be honest with you, I never know who anyone is. So I'm never starstruck. If David Tennant was there, I think I'd have an issue.
Well, that's what struck me about this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt like you, like when I heard you were in Good Omens, I thought it was perfect because it felt like, are you already a fan of it, or were you aware of it?
I was aware of it. I won't admit here right now that I have had the time to read books in a long time.
Yeah.
But I'm totally aware of the how popular the series.
It felt like you're not going to be impacted by the gravity of it. You're going to go.
Oh,
in
I absolutely
and do it
wasn't,
right. And that's what excited me about it, because I was a similar one. I love Neil. I was aware of Good Omens, but I was like, I'm excited, but also, there's no pressure around
it
because you're not that
me.
One going, oh, this is that role that I read all my youth. And that can be a good thing at times, but I also think it can be a great thing if someone's stepping in and just going, no, here it is, like, let's do it.
Yeah,
here's
I didn't.
Me.
I wasn't worried about it because I was like, I kind of didn't know what it was I was doing until I was there and Jack Whitehall was stood waiting to do his scene. And I was like, well, okay, well, he's here. Oh, and there's Miranda Richardson. I actually, in the middle of my scene, I won't tell you which one it is,
yeah.
But I filmed, we only filmed for whatever, what the role that I'm doing, which I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but the role that I'm doing is a really small role. And yeah. I was filming for 2 days, but I came down with like flu.
Right.
Like, you know, normally if I feel like a tickle in the back of my throat, like I know I've got 3 days, it came in 20 minutes. And it was during the scene that there were no edits in it. It was like right. a one long 20 wow. minute scene. And Miranda Richardson, we'd done like 11 minutes of it. And then Miranda Richardson had obviously seen my nose. And I couldn't, for some reason, you'll see why in the shot, couldn't wipe my nose because my hands were occupied.
Right.
And she just stopped. She went, I think we're going to have to stop the scene. Jade needs a tissue. I had like snot coming down my... first time I ever performed with Miranda Richardson yeah. and I snot on her.
Amazing.
And then there's these two other actors having to hold my hand as well. Like, it couldn't have been worse. And I was like, I kept going, I'm really sorry, I'm not normally like this. Because normally I'm
not normally this snotty.
But also, I'm really tough as well. If I get sick, like in Edinburgh, I always get sick and I sing through my sickness. Yep. I just can do it. I've got asthma. I can do it, but it was flu. It wasn't even a cold. It was proper, like, I spent that it's evening worst. Shivering, and I don't often get like that either, so I was like, why now, why am I sick now? Yeah. But it was an incredible experience, and it's going to be a huge success. They've put in a lot of effort. There's a lot of passion on set.
Everyone involved in it is so Neil, good. The more things were coming out of who's in it, it's like, that's amazing, that's perfect.
Neil has created something that he really, this is what we were saying earlier on, which ties this up lovely. Yeah. Neil has created something he really is cares about and is passionate about, and you'll be able to see that in this. You'll be able to see that a whole bunch of people really gave a shit, and you can tell because when I was looking around, it was a lot of nerds on set. There was a lot of people like us, there was a lot of
all excited to be involved.
Everyone was just really really happy. I saw one person that was like cool about it.
Yeah,
you know, like I think everyone was super chuffed. Even like Miranda, you know, all the stuff that she's done throughout her career, she seemed happy to be on set as well. Like there was a real, like, even though she'd been filming lots and lots of scenes, there was a real sort of contentment and happiness about the role that she was playing. And also, how fun is it? Like, you should, I won't say any more, but you should see the costumes.
I can only imagine.
It's so exciting.
I love it.
And it's going to be I've got Good Omens that I've already filmed it. So that comes out this year. I'm also in, I've got a series coming out on Comedy Central, which hasn't been announced yet, but I'll just say there is a series coming out on Comedy Central. There's quite exciting things in the pipeline. I'm writing a series at the moment about my time as being a fat dancer.
Brilliant.
It's just, I've changed agencies recently as well, which has been a really great move. I've moved over to Avalon.
It's exciting because they're huge. And
they make
do
superstars
everything.
Happen. But
I saw some new press shots the other day that are stunning, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I think you posted them on Twitter or something, or some guy shot them. It looks fantastic.
Well, that's the photo. So the whole show this year. So the most exciting thing is my new show this year.
Yeah.
I'm doing the whole thing in a black jumper because there's nothing more serious than a celebrity who starts wearing black jumpers.
Yeah.
And so I'm having like a piss take, but I'm this year, there's no more songs. Brilliant. There's no more glitter. There's no more drag queens. It's time for me to start taking myself seriously, or at least giving it a good shot, because not enough working class women are listened to.
Yeah,
they're looked at and they're spoken about, but no one really listens to them. And I feel like people that don't have as much as other people might have a better understanding about how to offer advice or how to, you know, see the world differently rather than this, you know, horse blinker version that some people can't seem to get themselves out of. You know, people are like, all men are rapists, or like, I'm like, no, they're not. Men are wicked. Men are awesome. Yeah. Best people in my life are men. It's just some men have fucked it up. Doesn't mean all of them are bad.
Yep,
and men aren't. And also this other thing, which is, if you're not the man who's like holding your friends up to, like, it's not a man's job to do that. It's not anyone's job to do that. You can't blame other people for other people's shit behavior. Blame them.
Yeah.
Like they're the culprits for it. So some people have called me punk. I always do the opposite. I'm never attracted to the crowd. I always think if a big group of people are all agreeing with something, that's how Nazi Germany started. And I'm always going to be a free thinker as much as I'll be wrong. I'm happy to be wrong, but just to be open enough to try and find my own point of view on something. And yeah. I think that if I can make young girls do that, you know, don't, you know, like, you can like Ariana Grande's music, but, like, don't fill your face up with this shit.
Yeah, perfect.
That's what I think.
Well, what better note to end on? Thank you so much for your time and
thanks
for
having
welcoming
me
in. It's been a joy.
I've loved this.
Thank you. Cheers.
What a lovely little afternoon.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. How lovely was Jade? I love her. I love how open she is. I love how opinionated she is. I love that we discussed things there. She put some stuff forward that parts of it I agreed with and parts of it I didn't. And when then we discussed it and went back and forth. I love that. I think that's really important. I think it's what she was saying early on as well about, because of her son Bingo adverts and stuff like that, she's bringing in crowds that aren't just an echo chamber, that are a mixture of things. So she tries to be that person to go back and forth and bounce around. The one thing I wanted to clarify was when it was spoken of, what's her name? Ariana Grande. I feel we were speaking of Ariana Grande as a package. So we're talking about what's presented to the public. I think we touched upon it briefly, but yeah, what's the management, everyone else is choosing to exploit. Obviously, you wouldn't want to put, you know, suicide attempts or suicides on the shoulders of anyone. That's not the case at all. But it is fair to highlight that when relationships or emotions or, you know, things that have been in the news are exploited by record companies, by the news, by the media, social or print, then that shit has effects on real people. You know, we like to put all these people up there as kind of these fictional figures, but they're not. So yeah, that was kind of the point. I wasn't sure. I can't remember, but I felt at the time I came away thinking, did we make it clear that it's meaning, you know, the collective choices, the choice of the media to focus on relationships, whether it be when they're booming or when they're over, and so on and so forth. And as I said, management to exploit it, marketing teams to exploit it, and things like that. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to say there. Come hang out on Saturday, guys. I'd love to see you there. In fact, if Jade and Rich have listened to this podcast, or what I sometimes do if I'm a guest on a podcast, I'll listen to the intro. I don't want to hear myself talk for several hours, so I'll skip that, and then I'll listen to the outro. So if Jade and Rich, for example, heard the intro and thought, well, what's he fucking apologising for at the end? I'm not apologising, I'm explaining. But if you are listening, guys, come on down to the club night on Saturday. It'd be lovely to have a dance with you. Stu Whiffin will be there. Chris Glasson will be there. DJ Destruction, Discotech Credits, my brother will be there doing the door. It's a family affair. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. The clocks go back or forward or something, so that's always a confusing night. I'm never sure what time it is, how long we're going to play. We always plan it as best we can and think we've got enough DJs, and either we've got too many or someone has to do extra time, because it just gets confusing as to when the club closes. Because I know that sounds like I'm an idiot, but because the clocks actually go back, I think it's at 1 o'clock, is it? So if we've programmed until 2 o'clock, is that when we close, or do we close at 3? I can't even remember now. Do you know what I mean, though? You know, we could be, as we close, we've suddenly got another hour because it's gone back from 2 to 1. Or it could be that if we were closing at 3, it's proper confusing, man. So come and get drunk and find out, is my suggestion to you. And yeah, head over to Patreon. I'd love your support over there. That'd be cool. But if you can't afford it, then don't. It's all right. It's no pressure. I'll be back next week. I've got Jamie East next week. It's a fantastic episode. I'm also giving you... I was not going to mention this. I'm giving you a secret bonus episode on the Friday, but I'm not going to post about it on socials and that, I don't think. So I'll sneak it out. But not this Friday, next Friday. Anyway, this has got far too confusing. Go and check out Dan Lesak's new podcast, Falling Forward. Now this podcast is over. Oh, I said I'd do the dates. Didn't I? Bloody hell. So Jade is at Bernard Castle on April 26th in Durham. Mac Festival, May 4th. Smoke and Mirrors in Bristol, May 7th. The Basement in Edinburgh, May 11th. The Pleasant Theatre in London, May 21st. Wells Comedy Festival, May 25th. She's in Lewes on May 26th. And Tobacco Factory Bristol July 11th. These are preview dates for the full tour to come later in the year. So, yeah, head along and check it out. I'm going to be going along to one because it sounds cracking. I kind of want to make it out to one of the Bristol shows because I like Bristol. And, yeah, it'd be good to see her in the West Country. I'm coughing. All right, this intro and outro have both been too long. More the outro. The intro was all business. I'll see you all next week with Jamie East and with a secret bonus episode as well. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.